CBS Eye on the World, I'm John Batchelor. The European Union, emphasis on the word union, especially when confronted with a world-scale catastrophe such as Ukraine war, leading to energy shortages, food insecurity throughout the globe, but especially in the Mediterranean basin, and headlines such as Eurozone producer prices hit record as inflationary pressures widen beyond energy, and Europe's new defense bloc, Nordics and Baltics united in face of Russian threat. Good heavens, I go to Stanley Pignal, who is the Charlemagne columnist for The Economist magazine, looking at how Europe is working or not right now to deal with an ongoing crisis, Ukraine, and the attendant shortages and pressures on leadership because of inflation, because of shortages, and just plain doubts about the immediate future. Stanley, a good day to you. If we'd made this up a year ago, we would have said we're just so gloomy. We must change the channel. But here we are. Those headlines certainly fill out your story about the leaders of Europe squabbling, but squabbling together. How so? What is the positive we can see from the debates about Ukraine and energy? Good day to you.
So the positives are that although there is a lot of squabbling in Europe, and we're seeing some old fault lines and some new fault lines between, for example, hawkish Eastern Europeans in Poland and the Baltics who want a lot more assistance to Ukraine, and some countries that are further removed that maybe are more ambivalent. But the one thing that I emphasize this weekend, which is key, is that we have just agreed in Europe a very important set of sanctions, which for the first time target Russian oil, which is a very large source of income for Russia. A lot of people said that it couldn't be done. A lot of countries are dependent on Russian oil. It was a very complicated deal to get to. There were exemptions that were made for countries that really can't live without Russian oil. But a deal was done. So although there are disagreements, and we hear a lot about the disagreements, there is still a sense that Europe is very much together when it comes to confronting Russia and assisting Ukraine.
The three leaders whose names come up all the time when dealing with Ukraine are Emmanuel Macron of Paris, Olaf Scholz of Germany, and Mario Draghi of Italy. Is that triumvirate as significant in Europe as it appears here reading the news, those three working together or in different directions?
So it is usually, but we have had a bit of a geopolitical shift in Europe, in the Eastern European countries that have traditionally been much more hawkish towards Russia. Are literally on the front lines of this crisis. They've taken in Ukrainian refugees. They have sent a lot of weapons to Ukraine, more, for example, than Germany, which is, it's been discovered in recent days that a lot of the promised deliveries of weapons from Germany to Ukraine haven't come through yet. And as a result, Eastern Europe has a bit more of a voice, and their suspicion is that the three leaders you mentioned are a little bit ambivalent when it comes to Ukraine. For example, none of the three have traveled to Kyiv, which is seen as a sort of shibboleth of how supportive a country is of Ukraine against Russia. And Macron in particular has spent a lot of time speaking to Putin, trying to mediate between Ukraine and Russia. He thinks of it as mediating between Russia and Ukraine. But if you speak to Eastern Europeans, they say, you know, what is the point of talking to Putin? He's a psychopath, and you're just appeasing him. You're just aggrandizing his ego by speaking to him, and we'd rather you didn't. So there are rifts, but as I said, you know, we are still doing important things like agreeing sanctions.
We've talked about the crises that European Union, the European project, has survived these last years, and this one crisis seems to be overarching everything because it involves food security, fuel security, and the future. The map is changing. And do the European leaders appreciate that scale of change? It seems now that you're being made into something, well, from this distance, Stanley, it can look as if you're united. I know that's a reckless word to use, but in any event, there was always that theory from H.G. Wells' time that what we need to bring the planet together is an invasion by Mars. Is Ukraine operating in that fashion?
Yes, I mean, that's a good way of putting it. The Ukraine invasion touches on three or four big thorny European dossiers. The first and most obvious is defense. Half of the continent, roughly the eastern part of the continent, thinks that European defense is assured by NATO, i.e. underpinned by America. France would like it to be assured by France and by Germany and by Europe. They think of Europe as needing more strategic autonomy. The second one that you mentioned is food. There aren't going to be food shortages in Europe, but there may be in places near Europe, and that has a tendency to lead to mass migration onto European shores, and that has caused enormous political headaches in the past. The third one, which you also alluded to, is the economy and inflation. We are seeing real costs in energy prices, food prices, and other things in Europe. That's of particular concern to places like Germany, which have always had a particular fear of inflation for historic reasons. And then finally, climate, which matters a huge amount to Northern Europeans in particular. And their concern is that because we're having to rejig the European energy map as we cut off Russia, that there's going to be a temptation, for example, to import gas from other places or to use more coal. And all these things are meant to be phased out. As you know, Europe has ambitious climate goals that aren't necessarily shared enthusiastically across the bloc, and there's a bit of a suspicion that places like Poland, for example, may use this crisis to kind of roll back a little bit what has been agreed in the past.
And the question of Mr. Orban in Hungary, I didn't think that would be settled. Is it a surprise that there's an accommodation?
It's an accommodation because there had to be an accommodation for two reasons. Firstly, Viktor Orban has a veto. Every country in Europe has a veto on some matters. This is one of them. So a deal couldn't be done without his approval. The second thing is that Hungary, although it is in more or less permanent confrontation with the EU, and therefore there are suspicions that it's always trying to blackmail the EU into giving it more money, Hungary is a landlocked country, and it gets an awful lot of its energy from Russia through pipelines. And there aren't necessarily very obvious ways for it to get its energy without it. So for a combination of those two reasons, both good reasons and bad reasons, Europe accommodated Viktor Orban. They're not happy about it, but that's what the EU is about. Sometimes you have to do deals that nobody's very happy about just to keep the thing moving.
Rosy scenario, the war ceasefire, and there's rebuilding to be done in Ukraine. The invitation or the application of Ukraine to the EU, is that a unanimous success, or are there doubters that we can integrate a war-torn and fragmented country into our project?
Very, very much doubt spread across the bloc. As a very rough rule of thumb, the closer you are to Ukraine as a government, the keener you are on Ukraine becoming a member of the EU. So Eastern Europe, very united in wanting Ukraine to become a member of the EU as fast as possible. Nobody thinks it's going to happen in months or even years, but even if you say within a decade, that would be great. Other countries, notably, I would say France and the Netherlands and some of the Scandinavians, think, you know, Ukraine is a relatively poor country by EU standards. It has certainly had corruption problems in the past. It has security challenges, I think we can safely say. And therefore, to promise that it's going to become an EU member anytime soon is to dangle an unrealistic promise. And so they would rather it be given assistance. Everybody has agreed that Ukraine needs assistance, and it might be able to participate in some kind of European community, but not be part of the core European Union. That's a debate that we're going to see a lot of in the coming weeks.
Stanley Pignol is the Charlemagne columnist for The Economist magazine. Squabbling in unison. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.